Thank you very much, everyone. We are now going to start with a two-minute opening statement by each candidate. The order of the candidate's opening statement has been drawn randomly. We are going to start with Mr. Bujak. You have 2 minutes.
I'd like to thank the core group for sponsoring this debate. I'd like to thank the other candidates for being here to participate. I, in particular, would like to thank Governor Otter for gracing us with his presence after refusing to join us in Twin Falls for the debate located there. Although I'll have to share with you, I don't know that there's anything the governor could say today to explain away the way he's betrayed the Republican Party and the people of the state of Idaho. My name is John Bujak. I'm running as a Libertarian candidate for governor. I'm 45 years old. I'm married. My wife and I have 4 kids. We live in Eagle. I graduated from Coeur d'Alene High School. I was educated at the College of Idaho. I served in the United States Navy, and after that, I was trained to be a lawyer and was admitted to the practice of law here in Idaho in 1997. As a lawyer, I've served as a deputy prosecuting attorney, a deputy attorney general, an attorney in private practice where I ran and managed my own practice for over a decade in southern Idaho. And I was elected to serve as a Republican as the Canyon County prosecuting attorney. I'm running for governor because I've watched our leadership here in this state take the state in the wrong direction. We have abandoned our conservative values. And if we continue down this road, we're going to find ourselves in the wrong position. Under the current leadership of Governor Otter, we have Obamacare, we have Common Core, and we have a governor who has refused to fight for Idaho control of its lands. If we continue down this path, Idaho is going to continue to be injured. Our children are not going to have a secure future. We are not going to have a bright economic outlook. And as governor, I'm going to go ahead and change that direction, turn it around, and restore traditional conservative Idaho values back to the State House. Thank you.
Thank you. Governor Otter, you have 2 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me too first thank all of Coeur d'Alene, all of Northern Idaho for the opportunity to speak directly to the people of Idaho about those issues that are important to our state. Idaho is a long way from Washington, D.C., especially philosophically speaking. And I learned about all of that during my years in Congress. But as governor, every day provides another opportunity for me to see exactly how bad things are in Washington and why we must not let our state reach that part of excess at the state of Idaho. Here in Idaho, we are an independent and self-reliant people who take pride in working together, collaborating and overcoming our challenges together. Here in Idaho, we are responsible people who take pride in living within our means and being good stewards of our resources. Here in Idaho, we are prudent in how we use the taxpayers' dollars entrusted to us, and we embrace accountability. Here in Idaho, entitlement is not part of our heritage and has not replaced personal responsibility. You and I have worked hard to keep growing our economy growing and to keep our people employed and positive about their future. And we did it without raising taxes or imposing government as a bigger burden on the people of Idaho. Now we are focused on creating better jobs, making government more transparent and accountable, and we are leveraging our strengths by building stronger public-private relationships in our communities. That means implementing my education task force recommendation, and it means advancing our K through career approach to making Idaho work. I'm grateful that we're a long way from Washington, D.C. Folks, our Idaho values, our Idaho priorities, and this civic virtue of our citizens can make Idaho become what America was meant to be. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Mr. Belukoff, you have 2 minutes.
I would like to thank the core group, the Coeur d'Alene Public Library, and the other candidates for participating. Governor Otter, we missed you in Twin Falls, and so did the people of the Magic Valley. I'm running for governor because I have watched for too many years as our great state has dropped to the bottom nationally in education and job opportunities. Governor Otter, under your watch, we are second to the last in the state funding for public education. 95 school districts out of 115 have been forced to raise their taxes just to keep teachers in the classroom and the lights on. Meanwhile, Governor Otter has squandered millions on misguided priorities and insider deals for his supporters. We are near the bottom in per capita personal income. Governor Otter, when a corporation that's a major contributor of yours overbilled taxpayers for managing a prison, your administration misled the public, saying that an investigation was underway when an investigation never happened. It wasn't until you cut a deal to let them off the hook that you called for an investigation. You put the interest of a major campaign contributor ahead of the interest of the people of Idaho. Governor Otter was asked last year if Idaho is maintaining its constitutional mandate to establish and maintain a general, uniform, and thorough system of public schools. His answer was, probably not, but we're going to do the best we can. Well, we're not doing the best we can. Idaho can do much better. That's why I'm running for governor.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Pro-Life. That's my actual name. It's a surname. I don't have a first name, so when I fill out a database, I'll put Mr. there, and on my driver's license, the state of Idaho just put a comma. So anyway, I got that name actually from the state of Idaho. I ran as a governor candidate in 2006. That was my middle name. And so the Secretary of State says, well, I'm not putting your middle name on the ballot. And he didn't have any law or precedent to keep my name off the ballot. So what I did is I went to court and dropped Marvin and Richardson and just had Pro-Life as my name. I could have sued him, and he would have used the Attorney General wrongfully to prevent me from having my name just Marvin Pro-Life. He wouldn't put Pro-Life on the ballot, just Marvin Richardson. Anyway, I'm a farmer and organic strawberry farmer. I've spent my whole life studying the proper role of government. That's about 53 years of doing that. I'm 73. None of these candidates are going to tell you that socialism is collective theft, that abortion is murder, that our money is a Ponzi scheme and it's counterfeit. They're not going to tell you that we're not going to have any gay marriage in Idaho. And what a governor should do is say we're not going to go to federal court, because that admits that on the marriage issue, the federal government has jurisdiction. The federal government does not have jurisdiction in marriage law, criminal law, all of those kind of things. We could prevent that. We could just enforce our law. But our attorney general and our governor decided to do otherwise. None of these people are going to tell you that public education is communist. Right out of the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels, 1848, said, quote, free education for all children in public schools. That's why our society is so messed up. None of them are going to say, sorry about that, my time's up.
Thank you for respecting the time, Mr. Pro-Life. I would remind the audience that if they could just hold their applause until the end of the debate, that would be very helpful for us. We're going to start with the first question from Mr. McAndrew.
Good afternoon. I am a CEO of a company looking to relocate my business to Idaho. How do you, as CEO of our great state, convince me that Idaho is the right place for my business? I'd like to start this off with Mr. Pro-Life.
Well, what I would tell the person is, listen, as the governor, I can't help you much because I just enforce the laws. I'm not the marketing agent for Idaho. And so what we're going to do in Idaho, if you want to come here, we're going to get rid of all of the health, education, welfare, recreation, medicine programs that we can. Our taxes will be the lowest in the United States, and you will enjoy coming to Idaho. That's what we have to do. We have to reduce the size of government so that we have the lowest tax burden in the nation. I don't think any of these other candidates are even proposing to do anything like that. Public education is over half of our state budget. Sometimes it's up in the 60% when you take everything. into consideration with that. And so that's what I'm proposing, that you just really reduce the size of government. And then all kinds of people would like to move here. And then, of course, if we had a good moral atmosphere, if you had a moral company, they'd want to come here. Thank you.
Thank you. Governor Otter, you're next, please.
Jimmy, the first thing I would tell you is that just look at last year's or the last few years and the expansion that we've had in the state. In fact, last year, Idaho grew faster than all but four states. Let me name those states for you. North Dakota, Wyoming, Oklahoma, and West Virginia. All natural resource states that obviously with gas, oil, and coal were able to weather the storm of that last recession greater with their natural resources than we were. But we had a resource that was much better as far as I'm concerned. We had a positive people in the state of Idaho that said, we are not going to be debilitated by what we don't have in exercising prudent resource and prudent management over those things that we do have, like our talent in the state of Idaho, like the fact that besides whatever else you're hearing up here, that we do a good job in the state of Idaho of creating an environment for business to thrive. That's why we've had millions of dollars, if not billions, of capital investment in the last year in the state of Idaho.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I agree with these other states that are leading the way out of the recession. They have one thing in common. They're energy exporters, which is why we need control of Idaho land, something the governor hasn't been fighting for. But regards to companies coming into Idaho, if there's a big company coming in, really, it's not government's role to enter the free market and pick winners and losers. That's not what we should be doing. And so, unlike Governor Otter, who in the past, for companies like Hoku, would arrange for special tax incentives or give them a carrot to bring them into the state, only to close up shop a little bit later and leave creating no jobs and filing bankruptcy of, I think, $1 billion of debt. That's not the way to go. What government needs to do is get out of the way, create a tax structure that's low, fair, and predictable, level the playing field, stop picking the winners, and let small businesses add some jobs to the workforce. Because if all of the small businesses, which are the lifeblood of Idaho, added some more jobs, we could have the same growth in employment without giving special sweetheart deals to the big companies.
Thank you. Mr. Belukoff, your turn.
You know, we need a better marketing campaign than tax breaks and we work cheap. It may be true that we are high in job creation, but we're also high in job mortality and business mortality. Rather than spending all of our energy trying to bring new companies to town, we need to work on the 40,000 small businesses that are already here in Idaho. 80% of job growth comes from small business. And if we concentrated and helped those businesses thrive and grow right here in our state, if just 10% of those businesses added one job, that would be 4,000 new jobs. And we can target the companies that pay livable wages instead of creating a low-wage economy with bringing companies into Idaho to compete with the homegrown Idaho companies that are already here.
Okay, next question. We're going to start with Mr. Bujak. Your website states that Otter Obamacare has got to go. What would you replace it with, as Idaho has one of the highest enrollment rates in the country?
I think the way that healthcare delivery is structured in Idaho has to change. We can't continue to take federal dollars in and throw it at a broken system and expect that it's going to do better. One thing I would propose is to look at the direct primary care system that the state of Washington is using right across the border. Now, granted, they've expanded Medicaid over there, and we shouldn't do that here in Idaho, but what they have are alternatives to primary care where people actually have access to doctors 24/7. They're not running to the emergency room spending Medicaid dollars, which is not cost-effective and not efficient. If we can create a model that has direct primary care at its center with a wraparound policy to take care of catastrophic care in the event that becomes necessary, we can use the same dollars we spend on indigent care at the county level and at the CAT fund level in order to fund a program and a model that makes sense for Idaho and take care of people better, take care of a larger number of people, and spend less money doing it.
Thank you, Mr. Bujak. Governor Otter, same question.
Well, first off, Brent, thank you very much for that question. When have we ever invited the federal government of any agency into Idaho to run anything. In fact, what I'm hearing, at least to my right up here on the stage, is that let's throw the federal government out of the state of Idaho, including all the land that they own. And so what I'm saying is that if we had to, if you believe in the rule of law, if you believe in the Republican form of government, and you believe in the rule of law, and Obamacare, no matter how much I dislike it, and I'd vote tomorrow to get rid of it, but if it's the rule of law, you're going to have to deal with that law as best you can. Did I like the idea of Idaho having to take it on itself? No, I did not. But I wanted Idahoans making decisions about the most important, one of the most important things that we have in Idaho, and that's our health care system.
Thank you, Governor Otter. Mr. Belukov?
Thank you. You know, I agree with Governor Otter that having the health insurance exchange in our state is a good thing for small businesses. It's a good thing for many people who were not able to afford insurance. I would have loved to have had a health insurance exchange when I owned the athletic clubs that I owned to find a better way to provide insurance for our employees. I think Governor Otter should help us take the next step to expand the coverage of Medicaid so that we can cover over 70,000 to 100,000 Idahoans who do not currently have health insurance coverage, that we are already paying for their care when they show up at the emergency rooms. We pay for that through our property taxes, through the state general fund taxes, and we are also paying federal taxes that we don't get back by not expanding the coverage of Medicaid.
Thank you, Mr. Belukov. Mr. Pro-Life?
Yes, you know, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Federal Constitution, there's about 17 articles there in paragraphs defining the laws that the federal government can make. There, you can't find anything having to do with health, education, welfare, recreation, medicine, none of those things. The federal government should never be into this. It shouldn't be into Social Security. All of those functions should remain with faith, and that's why we don't have any faith in this country, because we've let the governments steal all of the practical functions of faith. And I think it's a crime against God what we're doing. It's communist medicine. I would have nothing to do with it. I would veto any kind of health care whatsoever to do with this. And I'm 73. I've not ever taken Medicare. I've been 8 years now that I could be in Medicare. I'll never take it. I'll not have anything to do with it. Thank you.
I have a follow-up for Mr. Bujak. You mentioned that, I don't know if my mic's on yet. Hello?
It is.
Okay, good. You mentioned that the federal law has to go on your website. How do you propose to get rid of the federal law when, as Governor Otter pointed out, it is the law of the land?
Well, I don't think that I'm saying the federal law needs to go. I'm saying the healthcare exchange needs to go. That model of, again, controlling the free market. When you have health insurance companies that qualify for this exchange, and so only certain people get to come to the table and play ball, and the products they offer then are limited, and they can charge prices that are too high, or with premiums that are too high based on the deductible that comes along with the policy, that doesn't make any sense. And again, it controls free market economics. So what we need to do is get in there and replace the exchange with something else that might comply. And I'm not so sure, I'm not so sure that we can't get health insurance in the hands of Idahoans and go to the federal government and say our people are insured, so they're not going to be in violation of the federal law, and not have the health care exchange.
Governor, I'd like to give you a moment just to respond to
Peter,
that.
Thank you very much for that opportunity to respond, because we have seen, does anybody in this room believe that there isn't an insurance exchange in every state in the United States? If you do, you're wrong. There is an insurance exchange in every state in the United States. Idaho just happens to have its own, and it has one that is actually being run by Idahoans. Now, a couple of my friends in the Republican Governor's Conference said, no, we're not going to have anything to do with this. And so the federal government walked in, set up the insurance exchange for them, and then invited a couple of Obama's friends, Acorn, and Planned Parenthood to then come in and run the insurance exchange as navigators. And so, number one, Mr. Bujak can say whatever he wants to about whether or not he can get rid of the exchange in Idaho, but I would challenge him to show me one state that doesn't have an insurance exchange.
Thank you. We're going to move on to another topic now.
All right, gentlemen. I am the father of two darling young children. Why should I not be alarmed that I am sending my children into a public school system that is ranked 49th in the country in per pupil spending? I'm going to start this off with Governor Otter.
Well, Jimmy, one of the reasons you shouldn't is because you should read all of the stats that are being quoted up here. Now, these guys are quoting stats. I want to quote exactly what's happening. Why are we eighth if we are 49th in the nation in the amount of money that's put in? No question about it. We are 49th. I've seen the stats myself. But we're fourth in the nation on the amount of money that's coming out of the general fund going into the local unit of government. So for every dollar that they spend, 72 cents of that is actually coming from the state government. We're fourth in the nation on that kind of contribution. But let's take a look at wherever we are in terms of the stats. Let's take a look at where we are on some of the stats that show great things for Idaho. We're tied with eighth in the nation on eighth grade reading. Here we are spending 49th in spending, but yet we're eighth in the nation on the expectation that we've created. We're tied for 15th in math. Two of the most important things. And so, perhaps we are low in the nation relative to the amount of money we spend. But it's not how much money you spend, it's how you spend the money. And we're spending it smarter than these other states.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak, your turn.
Certainly. And when you look at education, again, this is another example of where it seems to be postured up here that maybe what we need to do is just throw more money at a system that isn't working the way it should. And it's not always an issue of throwing more money at a system. What we need to focus on is how much money is reaching the teachers and how much money is reaching the classrooms. Because right now, there's a lot of the money that gets eaten up in administration, and that's just wasteful spending. The administration is there because schools are being asked to do things that historically schools should never have been asked to do. And now we have a superintendent, a principal, a vice principal, a counselor in the school, a school resource officer, things that didn't exist when I was growing up and going to public school, and thousands and millions of dollars are wasted there. You add that into that, a common core system that's been adopted, and none of the teachers are trained in how to teach to it, and so they all end up teaching to this SBAC test that doesn't make any sense because it was handed down from the federal level and not developed at the local level. And Governor Otter's answer is let's have 20 great ideas come out of a committee without any answer for how it's going to be funded or how it's going to be implemented in a way that's going to be effective in the classroom.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life?
Yeah, I'm a non-socialist. These guys are talking, they're arguing about who's the most efficient at creating socialist schools. I say we need to phase out socialist schools. We need to amend our state constitution. The state is mandated to have public education. I say that we need to amend that. That's a big task, you know. I don't think you can get any of the state legislatures to say that. But this is the core of our problem. Our children go to school. They learn things they shouldn't there. They learn to be group-oriented. They don't have individual responsibilities that are kind of a initiative. It's really a serious problem. It causes groupthink. It creates socialism in all areas of government. If we hadn't have had public education, we couldn't have gotten into this situation. I just think it's deplorable that we can't see that that's what public education's caused.
Thank you. Mr. Belukoff, your turn.
Thank you. We are near the bottom in the rate our high school graduates go on to college. Only 5 of the 70 largest high schools in this state have more than half of their students prepared to go to college and succeed, according to the SAT test. Kindergartners going into kindergarten, less than 60% are prepared to learn to read. And those kids that are behind in kindergarten are still behind in the 12th grade. So we do need to improve our education system. We spend, you know, 49th or 50th in the nation of what we invest per child in education, and that shows up in our results. With 95 of 115 school districts passing supplemental levies, 40 districts cutting back to a four-day school week, districts around the state cutting out music programs and other extracurricular activities, we are not meeting the constitutional mandate to provide that general, uniform, and thorough system of public schools.
I want to follow up on the topic of education and funding education. Mr. Belukoff, you mentioned on your campaign website, I think it is, about this stat, the 49th spending per student in Idaho in the country. But we already spend, according to the budget, about 47% of Idaho's revenue on education. Where would the dollars come from for funding education or improving the funding for education as you propose?
Okay, you know, our state takes in somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 billion a year in state revenue. There's money there to fund our education properly. It's eliminating waste, like we've talked about. We should conduct business so we don't have to defend ourselves from awarding contracts illegally or defending ourselves for wrongful discharge suits. The other thing is a change of priorities, and I would use the governor's proposed budget from last year, where he proposed setting aside $70 million for a rainy day fund, $30 million for unspecified tax relief. I've got higher priorities than that. That's over $100 million that we could have used for education.
Just so we're clear, so one of the solutions for the education problem that you propose is to provide more funding for it.
That is correct.
Governor, I think Mr. Belukoff mentioned some things that directly mentioned you. I'd like you to respond to his assertion that we need more money, and maybe you could just touch on briefly where that money could come from to pay for the programs.
Well, thank you for that, Peter, and thank you for the follow-up. Indeed, in fact, if you'll see in the five-year plan for implementing the 20 recommendations that the task force came up with, by the way, which completely embodies all of the technology, the management, and the pay for performance for teachers and getting and keeping good teachers in the classroom that were actually in Props 1, 2, and 3. And I hear now candidates that are running for office saying, I agree with the 20 recommendations. Why? Because it's the first time in the history of the state of Idaho that we have had a five-year plan for improving education in the state of Idaho. When I became governor, business was telling me, Butch, I can't hire what you're turning out of the high school without giving them remedial math and remedial English. The colleges were telling me, Butch, you're filling up our remedial classes at the community college level or at the university level. With kids that now take five and a half years to finish their school. We are committed. We had bipartisan support, Democrat, Republican, bicameral, both the House and the Senate. We got the business community on board. We got the education community on board for these recommendations and the eventual expenditure over the five-year period of those dollars to implement those 20 recommendations. And those are coming, by the way, from growth. We were the fastest, as I said earlier, we're the fastest growing, fifth fastest growing state in the union.
Thank you, Governor. I'd just like to go just briefly, Mr. Bujak, do you agree with the spending over the 5 years to improve education?
Well, I mean, the problem with that is you can't guarantee what the next legislature is going to do. And as Governor Otter knows, one legislature can't bind the next year's legislature to anything going forward.
But so what about the plan itself? Are you in favor of the plan?
The 20-point plan? You know, there's things within the 20-point plan that I like, but I think the notion that we're going to implement it over 5 years is another example of the governor writing a check that the taxpayer simply can't cash, because that money's going to have to come from someplace. He's claiming it's going to come from growth. You know, that's working with projections, not hard numbers and dollars that already exist. So, I mean, if we're going to try to fund this, I don't know that there's $350 million there, but there are places we could look to be more efficient in government, maybe stop the number of nonviolent offenders we put in the prisons, for example,
and pull money from there. You would be in favor of doing some of that funding if we can find the money.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mr. Pro-Life, I think your position is pretty clear. It's just to get rid of public education, if I heard you correctly, but just briefly.
Oh. Yeah, just briefly. We have home education. We have 8 children. Probably we've saved the state over $500,000 just by not putting our children in the public schools. But the problem is this. Brick and mortar schools will pass. It's the wrong model totally. Our children get in front of their computer. They learn all kinds of things. They don't have to change classes. They don't have to monkey around going on buses, all kinds of things. Electronic education is the future. And if Idaho goes to that first, we reduce the costs. Teachers don't have to be laid off. It can be reduced just by...
Mr. Perley, I hate to cut you off, but we really do have to move on to other topics.
I know.
We have time to do it.
Thanks.
But maybe you can highlight some of those points as we ask more questions.
All right. Sorry about that.
Okay. This question is for the challengers. The August unemployment statistics were just released, and Idaho is at 4.7% unemployment. That outpaces the country right now. Is the state going in the right direction? And I'll start with Mr. Belukov.
Thank you. At 4% unemployment, that sounds really good when you first look at it, but let's take a look at the kind of jobs that have been created. We are number two in the percentage of minimum wage jobs in the United States. Over half of our workers earn less than $11.15 an hour. We learned by a recent news report that it takes $14.57 an hour to support yourself. So over half of our workers are not supporting themselves. As I've traveled around the state and talked to people who have run homeless shelters and food banks, they tell me that they are having greater demand on their services than they've ever had, ever had. And so even though we have low unemployment, the people that are standing in those lines to receive some food assistance are working one or two jobs at minimum wage and can't make ends meet.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life?
Yeah, that 4.7 figure is a totally bogus figure, you know. We all know that we're in a depression. I see all kinds of people that are not employed, underemployed, and it doesn't matter what the statistic says. We are in serious problems economically. And the only way we can get out of it is to become competitive, even with foreign markets. And that would mean that we would have to really slim our government down to be competitive with foreign markets. So that's my answer to that question. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak?
Thank you. You know, lower unemployment is generally good, but you also have to look at what people are able to earn. And in Idaho, as I've been traveling around the state, I am just amazed by how many families with whom I speak that fall within what I would call the working poor. Both parents working jobs, but they don't pay enough to pay a livable wage, certainly not enough for them to raise their kids here in the state. And so it's not just an issue of statistics on unemployment rates. It's statistics on how many people are earning a livable wage. And if you're going to have livable wages in Idaho, that's going to involve energy production, manufacturing, logging, things that involve our natural resources. If we can get access to those and start exporting our energy, exporting products that we can make from those resources, our wages will be higher. And as the economy strengthens, our wages will be higher. And if an unemployment rate that low is on the books, it's actually going to mean something to families trying to make their way and raise a family here in Idaho.
Thank you. Governor Otter, is there any merit to what your opponents are saying?
Well, they're picking and choosing those stats that they want to try to impress the folks with how bad off we are. First off, you know, I've had a lot of different jobs, and I suppose at one time or another, every person in this room has had a job. But I never, ever, when I went into that employer and asked him for that job, and dedicated myself to doing that job, had him ask me, well, how much does it take for you to make a living? You know, how much do I have to pay you? He said, here's what I'm going to pay you. Now, you decide whether or not you want to take the job. However, if you take the job at $7.25 an hour and you do a good job, and in 2 or 3 weeks you've really learned that job well and can produce more for me in my product or the service that I'm providing, I'm going to up your pay. Now, I come from a family of 9 kids. And I can remember at least several times when every member of the family plus mom and dad were working. Now, those of us that were fresh on the job were getting low pay. And that's the stats that he's talking about. However, my dad, let's take a look at total family income in the state of Idaho. You'll see a much different picture.
Thank you, Governor. Okay, now I'm going to take you back maybe 20 years. Now, I didn't go to University of Idaho, but let's just say I did. And I graduated the top of my class to boot.
Let's say you were a salutatorian or something.
Yeah, something like that. Let's say I graduated in education. Why do I stay in Idaho when there are five of our six bordering states pay a higher wage? And I'll start with Mr. Belukoff again.
Thank you. As I've traveled around the state, visiting with teachers, superintendents, and school board trustees, the consistent message I'm hearing is that school districts are losing good, qualified teachers to the surrounding states. They go right across our borders to earn 50 and sometimes close to 100% more than they are earning in Idaho. I don't know of a business that tries to hire the best employees by paying the lowest wages. So, and we're putting more obstacles in front of them. The tiered licensure program that's being considered right now, as I've talked to teachers, that is one of the first things they bring up is what the obstacles that's going to create for them to remain employed in Idaho, to have to go through all those hoops. We need to show more respect to our teachers. We need to make it easier for districts to hire and retain the best teachers.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life?
Well, they have it all wrong. Obviously. We have to improve our economy before we can generate enough taxes to pay people more. And if we're not, and we can't improve our economy just by doing what we're doing. We're going to have to reduce everything having to do with the cost of government. Hey, the Butch could take a pay cut. You know, we could all take some pay cuts. We sell things, our organic strawberries, we sell them at a lower price so that people can get good food, but also because people are poor in Idaho. And it's just really bad economics to just think that, hey, teachers need more money, we're just going to pay them more money. We can't do that. We have a balanced budget law in Idaho, and so we have to get real. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak?
Yeah, and just to clarify the question, are you talking about education folks coming out of school, teachers, or people in general coming out of school and higher wages being paid in other states?
It can go either way.
It seems to me that the answer is why would they stay? Probably they wouldn't choose to stay if there were higher wages outside the state, if money is the sole benchmark of what's important to them. There are things about living in Idaho that are really important to me that have nothing to do with money. It's enjoying the land. It's being able to hunt. It's being able to fish. Do things with my kids that I wouldn't be able to do in other states. That has value, too. So, you know, people that go to the University of Idaho and are from Idaho and they respect and appreciate what Idaho has to offer, they'd be willing to accept less pay. But I think what they expect from their government is not to be overtaxed, certainly not to have government interfering in the marketplace, and that, again, taxes are going to be low, fair, and predictable, so we can go about our business of earning a living here in Idaho and still enjoy the things Idaho has to offer.
Thank you. Governor Otter?
Idaho ranked 11th in the nation in the average teacher pay. Now, this is directly from the National Education Association's stats. The average teacher pay in Idaho is $51,000, which is 31st in the nation and more than Montana and or Utah in our surrounding states. The Wallet Hub, which just came out this week and had to be disappointing to those up here on the dais, said that Idaho was the 12th best state in the nation to be a teacher. And so, I reject this negative. This is not Idaho. Idaho, when we were in the depths of the recession, Idahoans stepped up with a positive attitude and said, we're not worried about stats. We're going to come forward with solutions. And that's exactly what we did. And that's why we're leading this nation out of the recession. And we'll continue to lead this nation in economic development.
Thank you.
Can I follow up by any chance?
We would. At this point, we probably have to move on just because of the limitations on time that we have today. We want to cover as many topics as we can. At the closing statement, if you want to address anything that you feel may have been missed, you can do that. Thank you.
Write me a note.
Okay. Mr. Bujak, as you previously stated, you are opposed to expanding Medicaid. There are some that say that the expansion or redesigning of Medicaid would save Idaho taxpayers approximately $1 billion over the course of the next 10 years, as well as provide appropriate preventive and primary care to some of the most vulnerable. Why do you oppose this expansion, and what do you have to say to our neighbors that may have only emergency room admittance as an option?
Well, again, it's a great question, but what we need to do is change the model. You can't just throw more money at it. And what people forget about Medicaid expansion is there are costs that come along with it. You know, they're promising to pay the whole amount for 3 years, and after that, the state's going to have to start picking up 10%. And even on top of that, we have to pay for administration of the program. And so even with the additional money coming in, we have no primary care providers to take care of the patient, so the quality isn't going to improve. And we end up being stuck with a bill at the end of the day that we may or may not be able to pay. You know, Idaho ran into trouble with Medicaid before, back in the 90s, when it was unable to pay its share of Medicaid at that point in time. And so I think it's a slippery slope. You start going down that road, especially when there are alternatives and there's adequate funding in the indigency fund and the CAT funds to put a different model in place. You know, the direct primary care model can take care of folks, give them all their primary care for between $20 and $80 a month, depending on their age. That's a much more affordable system than a hospital system that can't take care of the patients and are charging more because they can get more out of the insurance companies, who are really the ones benefiting from this exchange.
Thank you. Governor Otter, you have a similar but maybe different position as Mr. Bujak.
Well, first off, I would say that once in a while I hear how great the private sector is, and I agree. But whenever it befits a candidate to say, well, these greedy guys in the private sector, then it's time to beat up on them. And what I would say to you is this, that under Obamacare, we're going to have an expansion in Medicaid, whether you like it or not, because there are those people in Medicaid up to 133% of poverty that already qualified for Medicaid. And that's half of the folks that you're talking about, half, about 70,000, 80,000 people. That's what they call the government's term, woodwork group. Those people are already making $31,700 a year or less for a family of four, so they already qualified. The only question that we're talking about here is, what do we do with what we call the surge group? If we were to move from 133% of poverty to 138% of poverty, and that's the decision that we have to make. And I'm telling you, we're not making that decision, and I can't go to the legislature and say, make that decision until I can put some real certain dollars and costs on it.
Thank you. Mr. Beluka, as previously noted, you're a supporter of the expansion of Medicaid. Given the size of the national debt and the need to cut federal spending, if the federal government changes its mind and stops funding Medicaid expansion, which I think is what Mr. Bujak was pointing out, how would the state pay for it, and what will it do to protect itself from a huge unfunded program falling into its lap?
We are already paying for people who are uninsured. They show up at the emergency rooms, and if they don't have insurance, the state, the County Indigent Care Fund picks up the first $11,000 of their bill. If it's more than that, the state catastrophic fund kicks in to pay for it. And whatever the hospitals write off as bad debts or charity care goes into computing their charges, which has a direct effect on the premiums you and I pay for our insurance. So we're already paying for people who are uninsured. Getting back some of the federal tax dollars that we spend in just makes perfect sense, because it will free up local dollars that we are already paying. And if we don't take the federal government's offer, our tax dollars are going to some other state to fund their Medicaid program. And I would say, name a federal program that's been cut once it's been in place.
Pilt.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life, would you, we're not sure where you stand, but can you help us out on that?
Well, take a big guess. You know, we should not even have any government having anything to do with health care. And when you get a health care monopoly carried on by AMA and all of the university medical groups, you know, that carry on, there's no alternative medicine. Sometimes if you practice alternative medicine, you can get in big trouble. You're like an outlaw. You're doing something quackery. You know, you're harming people, and that's absolutely false. herbs are better than pharmacy, and vaccination should not be mandated by government. And it's been shown that they are harmful, very harmful in many cases. And so when you get government mandated or supported health care, you're going to get worse health.
I want to follow up on this topic really quickly. If let's just make an assumption that the federal dollars will always be there. Mr. Bujak, are you still in support? Would you be in support of expanding Medicaid if the dollars are always there?
For Medicaid expansion, I would not.
Okay, and what's the reason for that?
I think that with federal dollars coming in to an already broken system, you're not going to get any superior result, either in level of care or access to primary care for these people.
And what about Governor Otter's point that, you know, we're already going to have 70 to 80,000 people come onto this program regardless of what we do? How do you respond to that?
Well, again, I start answering that where I start answering the prior question. Medical care in Idaho needs to be completely restructured. I don't care how much money you throw at it or how you change the funding mechanism. People are not getting the care they need. So, you know, okay, the federal government's going to force more dollars down our throat and let more people onto Medicaid. It doesn't change the fact that here in Idaho we can't get access to good primary care.
So your solution to the problem would be to redesign the system to make it provide better care.
Redesign the system, don't support continued federal spending that we can't afford as a nation, and use current indigency funds and CAT fund money to fund that new model.
Governor Otter, I want to let you respond to what Mr. Bujak is saying about the program and just redesigning it, and also to the argument that we might as well take the tax dollars, because if we don't take them, somebody else will.
Well, number one, I've got a stack of letters too. First off, Secretary Sebelius at HHS asking for waivers on the health care expansion. Almost every one of them were turned down. There were a few things, minor things, that we received. But what we were really trying to do was fix the old system. The old system where the state now pays 30% and the federal government pays 70%. Because we thought, why put a whole bunch of new people onto a system that's already broke? And the old health Medicaid system is already broke. So we wanted to fix that first. We didn't do so well on that, because there were a lot more waivers that we asked for that we simply didn't get. But I know of the model that that Mr. Bujak is talking about up in Washington. And I'm wondering, has it anything to do with the new legalization of marijuana or the actual amount of folks that are entering the health care system? Maybe they don't know they're sick.
Mr. Belukov, I want to give you... That's an interesting point, Governor.
Yeah, right. You're right.
Mr. Belukov, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to the assertion that this money could go away and the state will be stuck with the debt, with a program that we can't pay for.
We are already paying for people who are uninsured. It seems to me we will be right back in the situation we're in right now. So why wouldn't we move forward and let the federal government give us back some of the federal income taxes that we've been paying in? Because if we don't take the dollars, we're leaving them on the table to be used in other states. I would prefer to see us use the dollars here in Idaho, and let's free up our property tax and some of the state tax that we are using to care for uninsured people.
I just want to have you focus on one point, and that is, if we do take the dollars and they're taken away at some point, won't the taxpayer be left holding the bag on that? Or are we going to cut back the program at that point?
We'll be in the same situation we're in right today.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that position. We're going to move on to another question.
Gentlemen, the technology industry is synonymous with high-paying jobs. In your personal or professional life, and please be as specific as possible, what makes you the best leader to put Idaho on the technology map? We're going to start with Mr. Pro-Life.
I'm not the best guy. I'm a farmer. What do I know about technology? I don't even have a smartphone. I just have a regular cell phone. I use a computer. I'm probably pretty literate at that. And I don't know. You know, there's got to be – technology will continue to increase. There will be more and more technology. But to get those jobs, we're going to have to be competitive with foreign labor markets, and we are not. Micron, exports, manufacturing, and even research and technology, all those kind of things, to foreign places. That will continue. We just have to get competitive if we're going to think about getting high-tech manufacturing jobs in Idaho. And we're not, nobody's proposing that except me. We just really have to cut the size of our government and get government out of our lives. We're messed up people. Thanks.
Thank you. Governor Otter, your turn.
Well, Jimmy, I don't know if I personally am the best one to speak to the technology and where it's going. But I will tell you this. I'm smart enough to reach out to people that are a lot smarter than I am about that. And Jay Larson and the Idaho Technology Council is one of those groups that I meet with each and every month. And each and every month, they bring two or three new companies in, small companies, by the way, because Idaho is the second best state in the union to start a small company. It's not my figures. That happens to be a National Business Publication figures. And so meeting with those people, I get a refreshment course almost once a month. Then annually, we reach out to the best four or five technology inventions in the state of Idaho. Finally, I would say, why do I have such great faith in it? In 1978, I went out on Cole Road in Boise, Idaho, into the basement of a dentist office and saw the totality of Micron technology. Two people. And I see what Micron has done. The sky's the limit.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak.
You know, as far as attracting technology and those types of jobs to the state, I think you need to understand the value of the products and the services that they can bring. And one thing that I do have experience with, when I served as the elected prosecutor in Canyon County, one of the things I did to make government more efficient and save money was to use technology. And we made everything cloud-based. Everybody went to laptops instead of using paper folders. And I gained a real appreciation for how much you can do with a lower number of people getting a better result through using technology. And I think when you value those types of services and products, and you meet with people who are passionate about it, and you can put that together with what Idaho has to offer, both from an economic advantage perspective and from a lifestyle perspective, that's going to be a recipe for bringing those businesses here and a recipe for success.
Thank you. Mr. Belukoff, your turn.
Thank you. I'm a good listener. During this last week, I met with two different technology groups who told me that what's preventing their expansion and growth is they can't find the workers here in Idaho that are qualified to meet the needs of their company. One of those groups told me that we're not teaching Linux in the schools, and that's what drives 68% of the servers that run the cloud. They need people to be able to teach that kind of computer language so they have people who can write code to do that. One of those companies is expanding. It's a growing company, but they're not expanding in Idaho. They're expanding in Indiana because that's where they can find people that know how to write code with Linux. So we need to then get these companies together with our universities and colleges to teach the right thing so that we have workers that are prepared to work and do the things that our companies need them to do.
All right. Peter, could I have a follow-up on that? Because I think AJ just made the point that I made earlier, and that is businesses were coming to me and saying, you're not turning out of high school the kind of people that we need to go to work for us. And so was the universities. We have to do all this remedial work. And so that's why my task force is trying to build these folks that can go to work for those companies.
Thank you, Governor. And I think maybe we'll throw it back to each one of the candidates now for a little bit of response. But I think I would like to focus the question maybe on, is there a role for state government in bringing those high-tech industries or any employer to the state of Idaho? And Mr. Bujak, what do you view the government's role in that?
No, I probably have said this already. I don't think government ought to have a role in picking winners and losers in the marketplace. I think that Idaho's government can have a role in advertising what assets Idaho has to offer to businesses who want to come here. But beyond that, I don't think it's our job to go out.
What about tax incentives? You mentioned that earlier today.
I don't think that special interest tax incentives is something I would ever support because, again, that's government intervening in the marketplace to pick a winner and a loser. If I give a tax incentive to somebody who's going to bring a technological company in here, I necessarily put the burden on small businesses who have to make up the difference. So I oppose them.
Mr. Belukov, would you like to address that?
Yes, our state government, the governor, does have a role to play. The governor should be the best ambassador, the best salesman for our great state of Idaho. The other thing we need to do is make sure that our education system is producing the kind of workers that companies want to hire, that we have the kind of schools that business owners, executives, and workers want to send their children to. That's what the governor can do, is make sure that our schools are the kind of schools.
Do you differ from Mr. Bujak in the use of tax incentives to bring in businesses?
I don't think tax incentives are a very good way to compete for business. I learned in business that when you compete on price, price does not build loyalty, because as soon as a competitor is willing to sell the product at a lower price, your customer moves on down the street. You need to compete on quality and customer service.
We have one more question we want to get to. Before we get to that, Pro-Life, I assume your answer is going to be the government should just get out of the way and let the technology companies and other employers come here.
Yeah, well, if we didn't have public education and it was private education, then some of these industries would have high schools, colleges, whatever. They would educate their people for their industry, and they would be here in Idaho if we didn't have public education. It's very simple.
Thank you. All right, we're going to have one last question, then we'll move to the closing statement.
All right, the question is, the state of Idaho, particularly Post Falls, has long benefited from the location of its liquor stores on the Washington state line. Now that marijuana has been legalized in the state of Washington, there is talk of locating marijuana dispensaries near the Idaho border. In your opinion, should or should not Idaho legalize marijuana to compete economically with border states such as Washington and potentially Oregon and Montana? And I'll start with Governor Otter.
No and no.
Please expand on
all
that.
All right. Well, first off, liquor is legal at a certain age in both states. And when the government sought to make some changes in the Washington State liquor dispensary, I thought they made a mistake at the time. In Idaho, you're not going to see that happen. And so we just simply took advantage of the marketing opportunity because we had the best quality and the best price. And so as a result, our 7-Eleven liquor store there turned into a 700-1100 liquor store. But marijuana is today legal in Washington, but illegal in Idaho, and I see no reason to change that.
Thank you. Mr. Bujak?
I don't think that the legislature is anywhere close to legalizing marijuana in Idaho, but if the legislature were to send a bill to my desk legalizing it, I would sign it. I don't think, I don't think that Idaho is going to move that direction. I think that having Washington legalize marijuana, though, did something important from a state's rights perspective. And that what's important about that is Washington has legalized marijuana, even though the federal government says marijuana will be illegal in the United States. But Washington took a stand. Colorado took a stand, and they legalized it. And what has the federal government done about it? Nothing. And I think that should encourage us to Idaho to take a stand on issues that are important to us and stand up to the federal government, for example, on our land use issues or on the health care exchange. Because perhaps, just like with these other states where they've legalized marijuana, the federal government would do nothing. That's the lesson from marijuana legalization. I don't think it's happening in Idaho anytime soon.
Thank you. Mr. Pro-Life?
Governments should never legalize things that are harmful, like gambling, like alcohol, like marijuana. Sugar's legal, but anyway, governments like to take something that's bad for you and turn it into a revenue source, and it is wrong. It makes the general dummy out there think that there's something okay with it, and so I'm totally against legalizing marijuana. I mean, if it starts to come over here and it gets real thick, we can't throw everybody in jail, but we need to keep it illegal because people need to know that it's harmful. And so that's my answer. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Belukov.
I am not in favor of legalizing marijuana. We are trying to get people to stop smoking and using tobacco because of the health benefits that would give our state, and it would relieve some of the burden on our health care system. we should not legalize marijuana and give people another option to put a harmful substance into their bodies.
Thank you. We're going to move to the closing statements now, and each one of you has 2 minutes to make the closing statement, and we are going to start in the reverse order that we started with the opening statement. So, Mr. Pro-Life, you are going first on the closing statement.
All right. What you can see here is three individuals arguing about who's the most effective at managing a socialist government. I'm totally against that. We need to get government out of our lives. Government is for the protection of life, liberty, and property, and protection of people that want to enjoy faith, all kinds of things like that. And so we're totally upside down and backwards in our whole culture. If we had many, many years ago not started adopting socialism, we would be in a very different condition today. People would all be employed. And one of the big problems we have today has to do with faith. Our churches are dumbed down by the government. They believe that they can't participate in politics. They can't participate in moral issues. I'm a moral activist, a pro-life activist. You can't even get the National Right to Life, Idaho Chooses Life, all of organizations like that, to say that abortion is murder. They know it's murder. They tell me privately it's murder. And I say, why don't you say that? They say, well, because we believe that it's offensive. People don't, and it's true. About all of us have been touched by somebody that's murdered their baby. Now you say, Mr. Pro-Life, that's terrible to say that. Well, it's the truth. As soon as sperm meets egg, there's a new person on earth. You cannot kill that baby. At 15 to 19 days, there's heartbeat. 21 to 25 days, there's brainwaves. It's a real person. Even before implantation, that's a child. all of these chemicals, birth control pills, morning after pills, what? Sorry about that. What I wanted to say is what they do is they tell a woman's uterus that she's already pregnant, so the baby dies of starvation. That's an abortion. That's murder. Thanks.
Mr. Belukov.
Thank you. We've heard Governor Otter tell us that everything's awesome. He wants us to believe that we can trust him with your tax dollars to not waste them to do the right thing. His scandals have cost us millions of dollars, and it's still going on. Everywhere I go in this state, people tell me that Butch Otter has been in government so long that he's out of touch with regular people. Let me tell you what Rob Waite, the superintendent of the Shoshone School District, said recently. He said, I've never voted for a Democrat. I'm a lifelong Republican. But in November, I'm voting for Belukov. In order to solve the problem, you first have to recognize there is a problem. I don't think Otter recognizes there's a problem. Let me ask you this. Can you think of what Governor Otter has done in 8 years in office that have made the lives of regular Idahoans better? Where's his list of achievements? Now, I'm not in this for personal gain. I've served on many nonprofit boards of directors because I believe deeply in community service. I've been fortunate in business, and my wife Susie and I have been very involved in our communities, and I've served as a school board trustee. That's a volunteer, non-paid position. I view serving as governor as an extension of that public service. I'm running because I've watched for years as Governor Otter and the legislature have decimated our schools and created an economy where too many working people can't make ends meet and support a family. As a businessman, I understand how to build an economy. I will truly make education our state's top priority, and I vow to you that I will never put the interest of a campaign donor above the interests of the people of Idaho. That's why I'm running for governor.
Governor Otter.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for providing this forum on the issues and the most important, they're most important to the people of Idaho. Elections are about you.
your future, your hopes and dreams, and ensuring that you have the opportunity to achieve them. That doesn't mean building more and bigger government. It means leaders taking what we've learned and applying it to how we do our jobs. Every day I meet Idahoans too, citizens working hard to do the right thing by their family, their neighbors, and their community. What they don't want is more government to solve their problems. All they ask is that government get out of the way so that they can use their own creative genius in solving their own problems. That's the social contract that most Idahoans want. That's the social contract that we all deserve. Now, that does not mean finding new ways of getting into your pockets and taking out your money and imposing more rules and regulations on you so that we can provide for bigger government. It does mean ensuring that Idaho citizens have the educational and the workforce training opportunities that they need to flourish in an increasing global market. It does mean making our government more efficient, effective, and transparent by increasing collaboration and demanding accountability. And it does mean making Idaho a more attractive destination for employers who need responsible and predictable tax and regulatory policies. Folks, people come from all over the world to Idaho, and they marvel at the optimism of our people and the strength of our families and our communities. And what they come to appreciate is the kind of creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurial spirit that has made the desert bloom. We have conquered the atom. We have the largest computer chip manufacturer in the world and the first ever floating green in the globe. But eventually they see that source of Idaho's greatness, and our hope is the people themselves. Together we can achieve our vision for Idaho that is safer, more prosperous, and more united than it's ever been. I'm Butch Otter, I'm your governor, and I'm asking for your vote on November 4th. Thank you.
Mr. Bujak.
Thank you. You know, you have a big choice to make come November. You can choose to stick with Governor Otter. And we've talked about his cronyism and corruption during the course of this debate, but I want you to understand, we're talking about scandals in the prison system, scandals in the juvenile justice system, scandals with the broadband contract for education, scandals in the tax commission, scandals in the transportation department that has cost taxpayers millions because he turned the other cheek while his buddies who were in those appointed positions just cut these backroom deals for the people who are connected, ignoring grassroots Idahoans like us. That needs to change. Because if we don't change course, we're going to have a governor who continues to betray the standards set down in the Republican platform, and a vote for Benedict Otter is a vote to continue down the wrong road. You could also choose to vote for Mr. Belukov. He's a Democratic candidate. He's going to bring Democratic values to the State House, but what you're going to get is gridlock for 4 years because the Republican legislature isn't going to work to implement the liberal values and agendas of the Democrats. So you can have business as usual, continuing to drive us down into a hole, gridlock for 4 years. Or you can vote for the one conservative candidate who can change the direction for Idaho. I've worked within the Republican Party. I've met with the senators and with the representatives in the legislature. I understand their frustration. They tell me about these different courses for health care. They tell me they want new leadership at the top and for Idaho to move in a new conservative direction. To get in that direction, you need to take a look seriously this time around at the third-party candidate. And before you say a third-party candidate can't do it, can't win, they've won in the past. Lincoln was a third-party candidate. Jesse Ventura was a third-party candidate. They won. They won. And you know how it happens? People getting fed up with the status quo and getting willing to come to the polls. And I tell you, if you go out and tell one friend and bring them to the polls, you can affect change. You bring two friends with you to the polls and vote for Bujak, we're going to make history and give Idaho back to the people. I'm asking for your vote, Bujak for governor, November 4th.
I have two more things I need to cover. First, I'd like to thank all the candidates for coming to Coeur d'Alene today and participating in this debate. We really appreciate it here in North Idaho. And I have one more question. You can only answer with one word. Broncos or Vandals? Mr. Beluka.
We're ecumenical in my
one
family.
Word.
I graduated from BYU. My wife graduated from the University of Utah.
That's not
so
one
we
word.
Root for them both.
Okay, we don't have a one word. Mr. Bujak.
I'd say Broncos.
Goats.
Mr. Prolife.
Neither. They're socialized institutions.
up and thank them.
Thank you again.
Appreciate you coming on. A lot of courage to say Broncos in this.